Welcome to the Government Contract Legal Roundup, a podcast focusing on important developments facing government contractors and grant recipients. This podcast is put on by the Jenner and Block Government Contracts Practice Group. I'm David Robbins, co-chair of the group, and it's my pleasure to continue to host the podcast. And today, I'm joined by our special guest, Special Counsel Nathan Castellano, who's got some pretty exciting news that we're really excited for, by the way, given his involvement in some foundational texts for government contracts lawyers. We thought we'd welcome Nathan in and ask him to tell you a little bit about it. Nathan?
Thank you, David. It's always exciting to join you on the podcast, and I'm especially excited today to talk about two of my favorite topics, the Nash and Sebenick Report and the Formation of Government Contracts Treatise. This has been a big couple of weeks for me. Projects that I've been working on for years have literally come into print. In August, I was officially named as a contributor to the Nash and Sebenick Report. I'm on the masthead with Byrne Edwards as a contributor, Ralph Nash still the lead author of the report. I've graduated from a regular guest contributor to formal contributor. The bigger news is that about a week ago, I received a 2,500-page book that is the fifth edition of the Formation of Government Contracts Treatise. I'm still shocked to see it, but my name's right there on the cover. I've been working with Professor Nash and others for years, working through that book, trying to update it. And I was never quite sure that it was actually going to come out the way it did, but now it's in print, it's in my hands, and I can't deny it anymore. These resources don't need much of an introduction. They were classics before I was born. Students, practitioners, judges have been reaching for these resources for a long time, and I'm sure they're going to continue to do so. And it is a real pleasure and a privilege and a big responsibility to keep these resources going in the decades to come.
What we love about having Nathan on the team here is, now quite literally, the encyclopedic knowledge that he brings. It's rare to have somebody at his rough generation, and I know we're all maturing in the law, but his rough generation being talked about as one of the very few candidates able to be sort of a tenured professor in this topic. Now, obviously, we don't want to lose him to a tenured professor track, but it just speaks to his qualifications, his publications, his credentials, and his truly encyclopedic knowledge of this area of the law. I expect to see really good things from Nathan going forward, and I very much look forward to the day he certainly eclipses me and everybody else here in terms of name recognition and capability in this bar. He's well on his way, and it's going to be a real pleasure to work with him as he does. All right, so we've got a whole bunch of bid protest decisions to talk about substantively today. Let's start with AxelGov LLC versus United States. This is a Court of Federal Claims case with Judge Solomson, who, as I've noted before, just seems to be really enjoying his time on the bench as he goes deep in a lot of issues of extreme relevance to the community and the government contracts bar as well. And here, the judge issued the latest in a growing line of cases that explore when an agency's proposed corrective action moots ongoing bid protests. Two protesters filed post-award challenges to the agency's evaluation and award on various grounds. After the protesters filed their opening brief, the government attempted to have the protests dismissed as moot, claiming that the government's proposed corrective action effectively provided the plaintiffs with complete relief. The protesters objected, concerned with the lack of explanation provided and the possibility that corrective action may be used to justify the initial award decision. Judge Solomson explained that the government lacks carte blanche to end cases unilaterally, whether via a voluntary remand or dismissal for mootness, simply by calling a mulligan, in classic Judge Solomson language with the reference to a mulligan. I told you, I thought he's having fun on the bench and the decisions are interesting to read. He ultimately denied the government's motion without prejudice for failure to provide sufficient detail of the proposed corrective action to establish the plaintiff's claims were moot. This case reveals yet another significant difference between bid protest practice at the GAO and the Court of Federal Claims. GAO routinely dismisses protests as academic any time an agency files a statement of intent to take corrective action, so long as the corrective action will result in a new award decision. At the court, whether the agency seeks remand or dismissal, at least some judges will scrutinize the request and take protester objections seriously. Yet again, emphasizing Nathan Castellano's expertise, he discussed a similar corrective action issues in a recent article published in the Nash and Sebenick Report, which is cited in the AxelGov opinion. Moving on to KPMG versus United States, this is another decision distinguishing the court from GAO regarding key personnel availability. Here, Judge Smith held that it was arbitrary and capricious for the agency to follow GAO's recommendation to disqualify KPMG from a reevaluation on the basis that its key person was unavailable. In September 2021, KPMG named an individual as one of its proposed key personnel. January 11th, the individual announced his intent to resign. KPMG notified the agency of the planned resignation shortly thereafter. KPMG was selected for award after that, and then the individual officially left the firm. KPMG is a partnership, called itself a firm the next day. Following award to KPMG, a disappointed offeror protested before GAO that the agency had misevaluated KPMG's proposal regarding the individual's availability. GAO sustained, finding that it was unreasonable for the agency to base its evaluation on a key person that KPMG had no realistic expectation of performing the contract. The agency followed GAO's recommendation and re-evaluated to find that KPMG's proposal was technically unacceptable for not meeting solicitation's key personnel requirements. In contrast to GAO, the court found that at the time of proposal submission, KPMG had a reasonable belief that the individual would be available to perform the contract. And the court further noted that even if the individual notified KPMG of his intent to resign, KPMG continued trying to convince the individual to stay. Thus, contrary to GAO's finding, the individual's resignation was not definitive, that word's a quote, definitive, until the individual actually left after the contract award. Under the court's rule, key personnel are unavailable when they are, in fact, no longer working with their employer. Notably, in rejecting GAO's approach, the court emphasized the public policy implication that the agency only disqualified KPMG because it had voluntarily notified the agency of the individual's planned resignation. Allowing disqualification based on this preemptive disclosure would only, quote, encourage contractors to hide the ball regarding its key personnel. This case highlights the different approaches GAO and the court take when key personnel become unavailable after proposal submission. Contractors need to be aware that their response may be subject to differing standards and outcomes depending on the protest forum. And this is only becoming more common, right? As the court delves deeper into key areas that may be subject to more shorthand dismissals or decisions at GAO, the differences are starting to pile up. So you really need to have a robust analysis of where to go with what type of issue. All right, let's do one more protest and then we're going to wrap up, because I'm sure Nathan, who's hanging out in my office while I record this, after giving his summary, would like to get back to work. So this one's B&B Medical Services. Yeah, that drew a smile. All right, good. B&B Medical Services. Hey, this one's at GAO. Here, GAO denied a protest alleging that the awardee misrepresented the availability and qualifications of, once again, key personnel. Although solicitation did not require offerors to submit names or information regarding key personnel, the awardee's proposal included spreadsheets listing key personnel, as well as copies of licenses for those personnel. Based on these spreadsheets, the protester argued that a significant percentage of the key personnel identified in the awardee's proposal were unavailable at the time of proposal, later became unavailable, or were unable to perform the contract because of expired licenses. I'm assuming they're talking professional licenses and not driver's licenses, but hey, I guess if that's a solicitation requirement, it can be either one. In order to establish that an offeror engaged in a bait and switch, a protester must show first that the awardee either knowingly or negligently represented that it would rely on specific personnel, that it did not have a reasonable basis to expect to furnish during performance, two, that the misrepresentation was relied on by the agency, and three, that the agency's reliance on the misrepresentation had a material effect on the evaluation results. The first element, GAO found that the protester proposal lacked any discussion of how it intended to rely on the key personnel and made no mention of them other than including their names in spreadsheets. GAO thus distinguished this case from others where key personnel were held up as important parts of technical or management approaches. GAO similarly found that the agency did not rely upon the awardee's key personnel. The only non-price evaluation factors were wholly unrelated. Indeed, in evaluating the awardee's experience, the evaluators gave no indication that they even read the awardee's list of proposed key personnel, which isn't terribly heartening given all the time and effort that goes into writing a proposal, and there's no evidence the government actually reviews it. But hey, I guess here it was to the benefit of. As we have covered previously, allegations of misrepresenting key personnel availability and qualifications remain an area ripe for protest, but the terms of the solicitation, the precise nature of the proposal representations, and the evaluation record generally are critical factors in determining the strength of the argument. And that ends our rapid blitz through a lot of bid protests after you heard from Nathan Castellano. I hope you continue to appreciate the effort to keep this light, crack jokes, when possible or appropriate. I gotta tell you, I really make bad dad jokes all the time, so I do try and keep it limited. But otherwise, keep this moving and somewhat interesting as you consume government contracts and legal news in an alternate format. And with that, let's close us out. We thank you for joining the Government Contracts Legal Roundup. If you have any questions or more information about anything here, I can be reached at 202-639-6040 or drobbins@jenner.com.